April 9th from 2 to 5 p.m., join WBAI for a teach-in and fundraising event at the Community Church located at 40 East 35th Street between Lexington and Park Avenues. The teach-in, focusing on the trial of Amadou Diallo and the rise of police brutality in New York City, will feature Richie Perez of the National Congress of Puerto Rican Rights, Iris Baez, mother of Anthony Baez, Ron Daniels of the Center for Constitutional Rights, Finney Burroughs, Congressmember Major Owens, Naya Durinde of the Daily Challenge, and representatives from Youth Force, among many others. That's Sunday, April 9th at the Community Church, 40 East 35th Street, from 2 to 5 p.m. For more information, call 212-209-2827. That's 212-209-2827. Pin him to a wall
and
a bird at his
leg. And you're listening to radio station WBAI. It's 8 o'clock, time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if she could, they would. So Billy Bones was the best to say the worst.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook, and we come your way every Tuesday night at this time, and we have the theme starting all over again. Isn't that nice? Well, how about that? So good we had to play it twice. Well, actually, our machines are all messed up, so I'm going to turn it off. Well, Isaac's on the other side of the room. How you doing?
Oh, right there yourself.
Oh, it's been a crazy week. It really has been crazy. And just to give you an idea, we have Kevin Mitnick, who's going to be joining us this show, and we'll be taking phone calls. So I would imagine that it probably would be in people's interest if they want to ask a question of Kevin to start calling now, because from what I understand, at least locally anyway, from what I understand, the phone does not hang up if you let it ring 5,000 times. However, if you're calling from, you know, some other part of the country or some other part of the world, it does time out. And that's just the nature of the phone system. So people in New York will have a distinct advantage in that regard. So if you're calling from a local area, yeah, you can keep ringing forever and it won't hang up. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. So please give a chance to the other people listening, though, people listening in other parts of the world, as well as we are broadcasting over Real Audio. And Kevin will be joining us in just a couple of moments. But first, we have some really important updates to start with. Really bizarre situation unfolding down in Philadelphia. I'm not sure if people have been reading the website, but Bernie, as it seems, is being targeted once again by the Secret Service. It's really unbelievable how many times these people will harass him. But apparently what happened, this was shortly after last week's show. We heard about this. As you might have known, Bernie was sick last week and had not gone to work. It seems one of the days that he was not at work, the Secret Service went to his place of work and started asking questions about him once again, all over again. As if they don't know everything there is to know about him, they went there to find out. Maybe they lost their records or something. They went to his work and started asking questions, and it was really kind of strange. Bernie found out about this the next day, that they had actually been there asking about him. And so he did the one thing that they never would expect you to do. You know what that is?
Call them?
Yeah, he called them. He called the Secret Service. And they don't get called very often. They're not all that popular, but
They are the Secret Service.
Yeah, you know. I don't think their number's even listed. But he called them, and basically asked what they wanted. You know, what do you want? What do you want with me? Why are you coming to my work? What do you want to know? And they said, well, we need to talk to you. Actually, no, they didn't even say that at first. They said that they couldn't talk to him because they were so freaked out that he was actually calling them that they said they couldn't talk to him. Then about 10 minutes later, they called him back. And
when they got prepared.
When they got the script together, they called him back and said, we need to talk to you. We need to talk to you at your house at 7 in the morning tomorrow. And Bernie was like, here's the thing, okay? I'm sick, and 7 a.m. is a very early time for me, and plus I'm not really sure I want you anywhere near my house. And basically, after going around in circles for a little while, they suggested a different time of 6 a.m. They just didn't seem to get it. That went on for a while longer. He offered to meet them at all different places, at a diner, at their office, at their home, in a bus, you know, wherever they wanted, you know, any other place except his house. Keep in mind, Bernie S. is somebody who has had the Secret Service abuse him quite severely and practically destroy his life. Not the kind of people you'd want to invite in. After a while, the agent got all flustered and said he had to go and couldn't talk to him anymore. So he hung up. 10 minutes later, the phone rings, and it's another agent, someone who's obviously higher up on the chain. Sounds a lot more polished. And this guy says, Mr. Bernie, or whatever it is they chose to call him, we need to get into your house in order to inspect your wires to see if your telephone and your cable TV are hooked up properly.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, these guys, I don't know if they watch, like, you know, Hanna-Barbera cartoons to get ideas on how to convince people to do things, but they're not really the best. It's pretty easy to see when they're just, like, lying through their teeth. So,
well, look at it this way. They were probably going to do it for free, whereas the phone company would charge you, you know, $50.
Well, here's the thing. Bernie suggested, after he finished laughing about this, he suggested that they go and get someone from, or he'd actually go and get someone from the cable company and from the phone company. It's a funny thing, because he doesn't even have a wired phone in his house. Well, that's kind of a situation right there. But, he'd get somebody from Bell Atlantic and from the cable company to go there and inspect it and report back to them and tell them if there was anything untoward about the connection. No, that wasn't acceptable. They had to come there themselves without the cable company, without the phone company, to inspect his wiring. And basically at that point, he just told them to speak to his lawyer, and that's pretty much where it has stood since last week. I do know that when his lawyer contacted them yesterday, and this is where it gets really kind of bizarre and creepy, they told the lawyer that the agent that Bernie had been talking to did not work for them, had not worked in that office for months. Yeah, so you have phantom agents apparently going and harassing people at their place of work, and then when they're called on it, they say, that agent doesn't work for us. What in the world is going on here?
Agent Smith? Why, no, we have no Agent Smith at our establishment.
It's a very bizarre and scary story. However, we have had news of it up on our website. A lot of people are following this now. A lot of people are watching this. I don't think they know how to deal with publicity like that. And, you know, as somebody, we've gotten a bunch of letters about this. I just want to read one of them really quickly. On the question of why this is happening.
Well, I could tell you why.
Well, this person, I think, did a better job
okay.
than anything you could ever say.
Sure.
But let's listen to this. Why? So he will get sad, depressed, and be more vulnerable to urges like getting revenge or just having fun the old way. Also, it doesn't look good when folks with as much support as Bernie seem to get by after having a run-in with the Secret Service. You know, you see, they aren't really happy unless they have destroyed you. To them, anything else is a fish that got away. Oh, by the way, they get him fired by simply showing up and having his employer wonder if he should keep Bernie on the job with the Secret Service inquiring about him. All that stuff about getting inside his house was a bunch of crap meant to confuse him into thinking they had other motives. Signed, Jeff, and I think Jeff got it right on the nose there.
Oh, sure he did.
Yeah.
Did Jeff listen to the show 2 weeks ago?
Which one are you referring to? Are you referring to
the one where Bernie was walking around the Secret Service little convention?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's not the bear sticking his hand into the beehive?
Well, it certainly might have gotten their attention. But the thing is, it was. I mean, you're saying he did something wrong by doing that? It's a hotel.
I'm sure it was a hotel, but I'm saying that, you know, you're walking around a place mm-hmm. where the Secret Service is having a meeting there, and they know who you are.
Yeah,
they're
but
probably
they
going to
go
say,
they knew who he
hey,
was.
How you doing?
They knew
was
who
fun?
It was. It was in a public hotel that was available. Anybody could walk past the concierge and
well,
get
look,
there. And it was all broadcast live, so there's nothing secretive going on here.
Understood, but what have we established was one of the main reasons that Bernie served some serious time the first time, where he made the Secret Service look like a bunch of idiots for picking their nose,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of funny, but, you know, he made the Secret Service look like a bunch of idiots for picking their
so
nose.
The right thing for him to do is submit and never bother them again and not even...
No, it's not even the right... It's not submitting, it's just like... saying, well, gee, if I continually bother these people, perhaps they will react in some way, much as a mosquito, you know, as someone would react to a mosquito constantly plucking into someone's
arm.
Yeah,
except I don't see him bothering them. His mere presence. Is that enough to bother them, his mere presence?
Hey, I'm not the Secret Service. Maybe it is enough to bother them.
Then they need to be bothered a whole lot.
Okay, but expect that there will be consequences.
Yeah, and there will be consequences if innocent people are harassed. There will also be consequences. It's a lot different than it was 5 years ago. And by the way, this happened 5 years ago to the day that he got arrested. It's a lot different because Bernie has a lot of support now. He has a lawyer. He has absolutely nothing going on that they could get him for except simply existing. Except simply being someplace they don't want him to be, that he's perfectly entitled to be. You know, it's and they have the eyes of the world watching them now. So really, the ball is in their court. We just have to see where it goes from this point. But it's an interesting story, something that we're really going to have to follow in future weeks. We don't have time this week
yes.
because we have a special show today. But we're not finished yet because we also have another intriguing bit of news. Mackie joins us on the phone from California. Mackie, are you there?
Hi there.
How you doing? We had some legal developments this week, which would mean yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, some rather interesting legal developments. You want to keep us abreast of that?
Yeah, that was pretty cool, actually. After we got completely shut out at the first hearing, the EFF was able to retain us a really good First Amendment and intellectual property lawyer here in New York, name of Martin Garbus of Frankfurt Garbus Klein & Sells. And so he was there. Representing us on Monday when we had a hearing. And the MPAA wanted to win by default at the hearing, but he argued, and we got a trial date set for December 5th, which is a lot more time than they would have given us otherwise. So the DECSS case will be preparing basically the rest of the year, and then trial will start. So right now where we're at is really trying to get a lot of publicity out while we prepare for the trial. And so we got bumper stickers on the way, Stop the MPAA, and the Academy Awards are this Sunday. So hopefully we'll get a bunch of those out if people are in the L.A. area and want to help out. There are flyers still on the 2600 site, if you could go leafleting.
Mm-hmm.
And the battle continues. The DMCA, we've been doing their Library of Congress had a commenting period, which is ongoing, and a lot of people wrote in and told them what they think of it, and that'll be getting decided in October. And meanwhile, there's been another DMCA-related lawsuit brewing from Mattel. Mattel, the same toy manufacturer, publishes Cyber Patrol, which is filtering software. And a group came out with a utility called CPHack, which decrypts their list of blocked sites. So everyone can see now just what they're blocking with the filtering software. And this included all sorts of things that shouldn't have been blocked. Educational sites, you know, breast cancer sites, things that they had classified as pornographic or illegal material, which just really wasn't. And Mattel is suing people who distributed the software, claiming, oh, well, it circumvents, you know, it circumvents our copy protection because our list of blocked sites is proprietary. Well, how are you supposed to run this software if you can't tell what you're blocking? You know, how can you decide if it's good software, which apparently it isn't, had some obscene error rate when they went through and just checked sites.
So they're doing basically the same thing that the MPAA is doing to us.
Yeah, they took a cue from the MPAA in a lot of their behavior here, because they're like suing everyone on the internet, basically, with no regard for geographic boundaries or legal jurisdictions. In fact, some of the same overseas defendants in the DECSS case have received cease and desist letters in the Mattel case.
Okay, Mackie, I have to cut you off because Kevin's getting impatient. he just called me now, in fact, and wants to get going with the show, and I'm sure that the rest of us want to as well. Give out the URL real quick, and we'll be following this in weeks ahead as well.
www.peacefire.com has all the information on censorware.
Okay, but that's pretty good news about the legal developments this week, and of course we'll be keeping people abreast of that as it unfolds in the weeks and months ahead. We're going to fight this thing till the end. We'll be right back with Kevin. All the buttons and getting everything all set to go. Kevin is joining us in just a moment or two. I want to take this moment to briefly show off the new Stop the MPAA bumper stickers. Yeah, it's radio. We can't really do it very well, but
really clever.
They're very nice, aren't they?
The O is the O is the MPAA symbol.
You don't say. You know, you're right. If you turn it sideways, it looks
just like
the MPAA symbol. Yeah, I never noticed that. I never noticed that. How about
remarkable
that?
Coincidence?
It is a remarkable coincidence. That's something. Well, you're going to be seeing these, not replacing the Free Kevin stickers in various places that you might see the Free Kevin stickers, but adding to them, because it's not like the battle ever ends. The battle simply continues into other forums.
It's a different color, too.
It's a slightly different kind of school bus
orange
thing. And we also have H2K stickers that have just come out, too, which are also fun for the whole family. Yep, Hackers on Planet Earth taking place July 14th through 16th, 2000, Hotel Pennsylvania in New York. And that's going to be a real hubbub of activity, the way everything is looking right now. So, Gwawin, longingly at it.
There
you go. Take an MPAA, too.
Ooh.
All right, let's see if Kevin's with us. Kevin, you there?
I'm here.
All right.
Hey,
Kevin.
How you doing?
Okay. And it was really good seeing you in New York.
Yeah, I had a great time. I'm looking forward to coming back.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to having you back. And I know a lot of people were really thrilled to see you at the 2600 meeting, especially when no one had any idea you'd be there. It's all of a sudden popped in as a result of that Court TV appearance and the congressional testimony. What's been new since the last time we talked?
Well, a couple of things. It was just, and by the way, it was my first 2600 meeting, I believe.
Wow.
I think it was. So it was definitely. I had a great time. I enjoyed meeting everybody. And a few things are new. I found out recently that that the Computer Museum History Center is going to have a lecture called the early it's on early computer crime, and who the speakers are going to be is Whitfield Diffie. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I think it's Diffie with Sun Microsystems. Peter Newman with SRI International, and Cliff Stoll, the guy that everybody knows, The Cuckoo's Egg, that came out with that bestseller book. And more importantly, I learned that John Markoff, the guy who libeled me on the front pages of the New York Times, is doing a talk, and it's titled Kevin and Me. So when I found out about this, I wanted to go attend the lecture, so I'd have an opportunity to ask Mr. Markoff to reveal his sources of these claims he made about me, or have a retraction printed. And I tried to get permission through my probation. I just assumed that the probation department was going to allow me to go. And so I booked a flight and was making arrangements, and then I checked with my probation officer, because since I'm on supervised release, going up to Mountain View from Los Angeles, I have to get permission. And what ended up happening is the probation department declined to allow me to travel up there to attend. But it took I just learned, within the last hour, this took an interesting twist, because individuals that's part of this history center, part of booking the attendees at the conference, it's apparently it's on Moffett Field, which is part of NASA Ames Research Center. So what you have to do is you have to RSVP, and they put you on a list, and you have to be a U.S. citizen to be able to attend the lecture, because I guess it's on a military base, or it's considered on federal property. So anyway, I just found out from my attorney's office that an individual called, wanting to find out whether or not it was the real Kevin Mitnick that wanted to attend this conference, and mentioned that, she would be happy to, have me attend, that they would basically be thrilled. But on the other hand, that she was calling to advise that NASA has refused to allow me on their property to attend the conference. So this I found out after I was declined by the probation department. So it's interesting that that NASA would decline to allow me, a U.S. citizen, on their property to attend a lecture which is largely about me. So it was quite disappointing that I won't have the opportunity to go up to participate in being able to, get to the bottom of some of the reports that were made about me years ago.
Well, Kevin, while you may not be allowed to go there, and it's hardly unfair that you're not, a lot of other people will be allowed to go there. Maybe you could give the exact details and what they need to do to get there.
Well, what I have here is I have somebody fax me the information that was on the net, and apparently to attend, I'm looking on here, I'm looking for the contact name. What I have is I have a telephone number, but it looks like the person's name here is Dag Spicer, who's the manager of historical collections at the Computer Museum History Center, and I have a phone number of area code 650-604-2578, but I don't believe that was the person I contacted. The person that actually contacted my lawyer's office was a lady named Karen Matthews, and her number is 650-604-2568, so maybe she's the one. Oh, here it is. I'm sorry. It's Wendy Ann Francis, at area code 650-604-2579, but they need the RSVP by Monday, March 20th, which was yesterday.
Uh-oh.
So I'm not sure that the permit, maybe they have to check the person out before they allow him, onto the Anta Moffett Field. But that's the person to contact, Wendy Ann Francis, I guess.
Okay. Well, I believe we've had a few people already get to that stage where they're going to be attending, so there'll be some kind of representation on of your side at this thing, and we'll find out exactly what is said. We'll report back on that next week. But, again, it's taking place this Thursday. Do you have a time?
Yeah, it's Thursday, 6 p.m., and it's at the Auditorium Building 201 at Moffett Field. And it's just, you know, just disappointing that I'm not, you know, able to defend myself, you know, even though I'm out. You know, I'm, you know, the U.S. government and NASA is, you know, prohibiting me from doing so. So it's just, so I guess I have to rely on my support network to try to do it for me.
That's amazing. And I think what we should do in the days ahead is contact the person at NASA that made that decision and get a reason. I think that's what we'll be pursuing.
Well, what about...
You know, my requests are, you know, are pretty simple. You know, what my requests are is, you know, the sources be revealed, or, you know, or the evidence put forward on these claims made, and if the evidence isn't there or the sources aren't revealed, to simply, you know, have the New York Times retract the false claims made about me. And, you know, I think it's a reasonable request.
Mm-hmm.
What about...
And that's, you know, what I was hoping to at least start the motions... you know, towards that end.
I think Isaac's trying to say something.
Yeah, what about the possibility of a teleconference or some kind of a speakerphone setup? Would they entertain that? Or?
No, it wasn't where I was going to speak. It was just, I assumed, you know, when the speakers spoke that they would have a Q&A section,
right.
A Q&A.
Oh, you just wanted to sit
a
in.
Q&A afterwards.
Yeah,
so
he had a pretty good cue.
I was planning on going up to the microphone.
Yeah.
And, you know, using that as an opportunity to ask questions. You know,
I find it interesting that, you know, you have no trouble confronting the issue here, and Markoff is doing everything possible to avoid any kind of confrontation. And it's funny because he's always complaining about how he's never gotten the ability to talk to you. Well, here's the ability right here. You're willing to confront him face to face, and NASA stepping in and protecting him from you.
Well, what I believe his concern, or at least one of his many concerns, is once it's exposed, what he's done, and there's, you know, no defense, it kind of might affect his credibility, you know, in a sense. So. You know, that's probably why he's backpedaling. But whatever, you know, I don't know the reasons. You know, he knows his reasons. But, you know, I'll just have to wait, you know, at a time in the future when it could be done. Unfortunately, you know, in 3 years after my supervised release has expired, you know, and, you know, where I can, you know, where I'm free to go anywhere that I choose, it might be a little bit too late. You know, I was kind of hoping to, you know, start the process, you know, as soon as possible.
Okay. Some other news that might be of interest to some people, and I'm sure it's exciting you no end, Kevin, that the film Takedown actually has been released in France.
Oh,
I know.
I guess they're afraid to release it here, but they released it over there. It's got a different title. It's called Cybertrek, spelled with a Q.
I believe they have a website called cybertrek.com.
Yeah, spelled...
But unless you're fluent in French, I don't think you're going to, you know, understand it.
Ah, but that's what babelfish.altavista.com is for.
Yeah, well, we'll see what a good job it does.
Babelfish,
yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
Cybertrek is spelled C-Y-B-E-R-T-R-A-Q-U-E, and just put a www in front of that and a .com at the end of that, and you should see everything that they have to say about this film, which...
I hope that the French population does a smart thing and saves their money.
Well, I think they are, because the site only had about 3,000 hits when I looked at it, and that's not very many considering it's supposedly been up since before the 15th. It says coming on the 15th of March, and here it is, you know, what, the 21st now.
And from my sources have told me that there's also, I think there was a computer conference or a computer security conference or something that was happening, you know, simultaneously with the release of the movie. But I think what they're doing is they're testing it in the foreign market to see how well it does, and depending on the results there, they'll decide, you know, what they're going to do in the U.S. From my understanding is they plan on releasing it to television, and not, you know, a feature film or a video. But so you can probably figure out the quality of the movie, you know, by their choice of how they're going to distribute it.
Yeah, it seems kind of strange that they would go far away to test it out on a foreign crowd that really probably isn't as involved in the story before they figure out what they're going to do here in the place.
Yeah, but and I don't know, you know, I don't know how that's going to work, but that's what I assume they're going to do. They're going to, you know, test it in the foreign market. And I don't know if France is the only foreign, you know, country that has, you know, purchased the, you know, the film rights, you know, to display the film. So I'm not privy to that information. So, but hopefully we'll find out as it happens.
Okay, so a note to our listeners, we're going to start taking phone calls in a minute or two, 212-209-2900. There are some open lines, so feel free to give us a call.
Yeah, there's another thing I wanted to mention, and I obviously, since I can't use the Internet, and I've heard that on the mailing list that you set up, you know, through 2600, that some people have commented that I'm selling out because I agree to go to the Senate to testify on how they can better protect their computers, and I was kind of disappointed that people, at least some people, would take that position that I'm selling out, because I don't consider it selling out. First of all, before I agreed to go to Washington D.C., I specifically asked the person that I was talking to, I guess their liaison or the committee person, whether or not this is to legislate or to do anything with any, you know, computer crime laws. In other words, to enact, you know, harsher penalties or anything that affects, you know, Title 18 of the United States Code. And when I was told, no, this has nothing to do with enacting any, you know, computer crime legislation or to change the penalties, but this all had to do with, you know, how the government could simply protect their own information that resides on their computers, that, and they were interested in my commentary on the rules and regulations that the Senate was, I guess, considering adopting. Since that didn't affect any computer crime legislation, I agreed to, you know, go to Washington and, you know, present, you know, the best information that I had possible to help them. And I don't, considering selling out, I just considering, you know, helping a different branch of the government where they need the help. And it just concerns me that people would take that point of view.
Well, you know, in all honesty, I really think that was a very, very slim margin of people that thought that way. I mean, I was very surprised to hear anybody felt that at all. If you had seen the testimony, you would see that the information you were giving was certainly helpful to everybody to understand.
It was common sense. You know,
it's the kind of thing we would print in the magazine. It's just, you know, we claim to want to spread information and share things. That's exactly what you did, except your forum was a little different. You were in front of the Senate. And I would hope that people, given that opportunity, wouldn't blow it and would actually try to enlighten people. And, you know, if they refused to listen, well, at least you tried.
Right. Yeah. You know, it was simply education, and I thought, you know, I could help at least, you know, the government protect their information, whether or not it resides on a computer. So I wanted to offer my experience and advise them in the best way that I can, even though, ironically, I'm prohibited by the federal judge in my case, Judge Felser, to act as an advisor or consultant to anyone engaged in any computer-related activity. And who in the world is not engaged in a computer-related activity? I don't know. So essentially, if you look at the broad interpretation of that condition, I'm just simply precluded from advising or consulting with anybody on any subject if they use a computer. And I think, you know, that's absurd. And it's interesting to note, I did some research and I found a couple of cases. Do you know what a call selling case is where where an individual or a group of individuals sets up a call selling operation where they utilize clone cell phones, and what they do is they sell time where you can call Pakistan and foreign countries, and they're not paying the bill, you know, they're just cloning to the unknowing customers, you know, telephone number and placing calls, and they're charging for it. And a couple of these call cell operations, you know, were busted by the Secret Service. And it was interesting to note that those individuals in those cases, why they did receive, you know, a short term of imprisonment, I believe, you know, less than 18 months, none of the suspects were given a condition of supervised release where they couldn't use a cell phone. And I thought that's really interesting because mm-hmm. in my case was really to do with computers and using a cellular phone as a tool to avoid detection rather than, you know, using it, you know, as rather than the cell phone being the target of the fraud. So I thought it was interesting that that in my case I'd be precluded from using a cell phone or possessing one, yet where somebody's actually profiting off, you know, cellular phone fraud, that they're allowed to use a cell phone.
I see it as a recurring theme in the prosecutions we followed over the years, that the less malicious people get hit with these things all the more, and the people that are really out there making a profit and really committing genuine crimes, they really just walk away from it, or they're given a very minor penalty in comparison to what people like you get.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I guess what the message the federal government is sending, if you're going to commit computer hacking activity, you might as well do it for profit, and we'll punish you less. But
yeah.
if you do it for the intellectual challenge and the quest for knowledge, well, we're gonna really come down hard on you. You know, so
yeah.
that's a weird message for them.
It's a weird message, and I hope nobody follows that, because that would be a real tragedy.
No, of course,
a lot of really smart people out there. Yeah, but that's where
you're crossing, in my opinion, from hacking to criminal, you know, just using a tool mm-hmm. to commit a computer as a tool to commit a crime.
Right. Okay. A lot of people have been waiting patiently, so we're going to go to the phones. And
do I get to choose like caller number 7? They get to win a Porsche or something.
Well, let me. maybe that's not such a good idea.
Hang on, I'm calling into line 7.
I guarantee you though that no matter what number you choose, eventually we'll get somebody we're trying to avoid. But just a word to the people calling in. Let's keep the questions short. Let's not have any speeches. And please don't call more than once, because there's a lot of people trying to get through. We have Kevin Mitnick on the line. Please ask your question, and hopefully Kevin will have an answer for you.
Some questions I might not be able to answer, I'll decline, but I'll do my best.
Okay, let's give it a shot. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hi, Kevin.
See what I mean? Okay, make it fast.
All right. Before I make it fast, I just want to give out my email address.
See, now that's called blowing it right there, all right? And let me just point out to that person, do not call again. Do not call again. We know where you are. All right. Kevin, you still there?
I'm here.
I'm sorry about that. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I know that you had went away when Mosaic 1 was in being, but I know you said that you're not allowed to interact with computers, but I would like to just get your impression, because there's been so many changes, things like Java applets and dynamic HTML and Microsoft's hierarchy. What was your first reaction when you just saw the extreme changes in how computers have actually evolved in the past 5 years?
Well, it's been quite overwhelming. In fact, I was recently at USC. They had a conference, their online journalism, the Annenberg School of Communication had a conference where they invited journalists from all around the world to attend, and it was simply like, it was just shocking to me, or just, I don't know if that would be the appropriate word, I was just like amazed, because when I was shipped off to prison, the internet wasn't commercial, you know, like you did. You were correct that Mosaic was at 1.0, and I believe Lynx was out. And it's just like everything has become the internet, and it's become so important, and people are, you know, exploiting the internet to, you know, in business to essentially become millionaires overnight. And it's just everything is .com now. I look at billboards. I listen to, you know, radio ads. But then again, I had an AM/FM Walkman in prison, so I was able to listen to the radio, and I noticed, you know, a lot of ads for, you know, internet service providers. However, I must have watched maybe 10 hours of TV for the 5 years I was in prison, so I didn't really get a real sense for how the internet has progressed and how it's how everybody's relying on it, and it was just very interesting to me, and it was kind of like a culture shock. I mean, then again, going to the supermarket was kind of overwhelming for me too.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks
for
your call.
Good luck in everything you do.
Hey, thank you for your kind words.
All right, bye bye.
Take care.
10 hours of TV in 5 years. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I watched, you know, when they showed videos, I'd watch the videos, but TV, I wasn't really interested in watching the programs. You know, usually it was the, you know, certain ethnic groups controlled the TV because there were, you know, more of that type of group, and I wasn't really interested in watching rap videos and or listening to Spanish, you know, stations. And then, you know, what was left is, you know, it just wasn't interesting to me. So when they had the news on or a news program, I'd watch it or watch videos, and I simply spent most of my time listening to my radio.
Okay, let's take another phone call. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi. Kevin, do you feel at all vindicated after you spoke to the Senate, like they finally listened to you?
Well, I wouldn't say I felt vindicated. I felt honored that they, I felt more respected, and I felt honored that they would value my opinion, but I didn't feel vindicated, no.
You didn't?
No.
You didn't feel at all like you had finally gotten through? You've been screaming at this wall for so long?
No, because really they invited me there to give them information. It wasn't like, you know, I just assume it's because they knew I had it's known that I have a talent for breaching security systems, so they just wanted to get my opinion on how to better protect themselves. I don't look at it as, you know, what has been important to me is how, as an individual, you know, my constitutional rights were disregarded. And while that, you know, if that can happen to Kevin Mitnick, it certainly could happen to you. And also about the manipulation by the media, you know, and that's what was important. But those issues, I don't think played a part in my Senate testimony.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Let's take another phone call. 212-209-2900. We're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
I'd just like you to know that in this month's Dr. Dobbs Journal, there was a quote by John Markoff, and there was a letter in which they supported you guys on the DECSS case. And I don't get the open source community. How can they stand for two things? It's just awful. And one more thing. Why have you not filed a slander suit against this jackass?
You mean Markoff? Well,
yeah.
Number one is the money issue. You know, I consulted an entertainment attorney that actually is well known for initiating, you know, defamation suits. I believe they represented Steve Wynn, Rodney Dangerfield. They won the Carol Burnett case against the National Enquirer. And you're talking, you know, spending upwards of $350 to $400 per hour for representation. And I didn't have enough money to hire my own counsel to represent me in the criminal case, so I certainly didn't have the funds. And number two is it's unknown whether or not, well, on a defamation case, the statute of limitations is 1 year. So you have to file your case, I believe, in 1 year that you learn of the tort or whatever, however it's termed when you're defamed. But while, you know, and as you know, I was in prison for 5 years. So it's unknown to me whether or not the statute of limitations was told during that period of time. So that's a question I need to get answered by, you know, a counselor at law. And lastly, when you're going after a media organization like the New York Times, who probably has, you know, several attorneys on retainer, who could overwhelm, you know, an attorney by, you know, doing like the, you know, by papering him to death. So the cost could run out. So it might, so an attorney might think twice about representing somebody against the New York Times. But because of the First Amendment in this country, I think one of the elements that has to be proven that they acted with malice and it was deliberate. And it's a tough thing to prove that they acted with malice and they deliberately did it to, you know, injure my reputation, because I did not put the New York Times on notice prior to the publication of these articles, because I had no idea that these false claims were going to be made about me. So when you're suing, when you're a public figure for the, you know, I'm considered a public figure for limited purposes, so such as, I guess, you know, the computer arena. But when you're a public figure and a news media organization, either prints, prints false claims or libels you, you still have to, usually they have to be on some sort of notice, or they have to exercise, I think it only has to exercise reasonable diligence in investigating the facts, which wasn't done, because I think even when Adam Pennenberg at Forbes did an article, last year, he contacted John Markoff to find out the source of the claim that I broke into NORAD when I was a teenager, and he just said, oh, he heard it from one of my friends, which is a BS line, you know. I don't believe one of my friends would have told him such a thing, but you would think that any reporter, or especially any fact checker at the New York Times, would have called NORAD to determine whether or not that that claim was true, which was not done. But that's the reason, you know, pretty much in a nutshell, of why I haven't pursued a libel suit. But if there's any attorneys out there that can answer the question on the statute of limitations question, and they'd be interested in taking the case on a contingency, well, I'd be interested in going forward.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Bye.
We're on the phone with Kevin Mitnick, 212-209-2900. And Kevin, I wanted to know, are you getting many many bits of mail to this day?
Oh, yeah. I've received numerous letters. I got gifts, I got CDs and videos and some phone cards, which have been very thoughtful, and I appreciate it. And I spoke to Carrie, you know, who's my webmaster on the Free Kevin and KevinMitnick.com sites, and I asked her to, I didn't ask her to post it, but I gave her the information of, you know, of the first name of the party, that what their name was and what they sent, so she can, you know, if she so chose, she can post it on the website. See, I'm not allowed to direct anybody to access a computer, so I have to be very careful that I don't specifically ask, you know, someone to put something on some computer, so I have to. But it should be up there pretty soon.
Here's the dilemma. In order for us to thank the people, Kevin has to tell us the names of the people. But you know, it's kind of like, you know,
because
Kevin,
if I had to respond to each letter that I, because I get numerous letters, which are, you know, which are very kind and thoughtful, and I would literally have to be spending maybe 10 hours a day writing return letters, and right at this point, I'm trying to get back up back on my own 2 feet, and, you know, trying to find gainful employment while at the same time trying to, you know, care for my father, who's still trying to, you know, beat this staph infection that, you know, he caught while in the hospital.
That's simply unbelievable that as soon as you came out of prison, you pretty much had to take care of your father, who just had a heart attack.
Yeah, he had a heart attack, and he ended up getting a triple bypass.
Whew.
And what happened is, when I guess during the operation, I guess the operating room wasn't sterile, or for whatever reason, he caught a staph infection. And the staph infection, he's been, you know, fighting for 2 months, and it's pretty much, he's, you know, disabled in a sense. So he relies on me to, you know, to do a lot of errands and to, you know, help him out. So I'm trying to do the best I can, and that takes my time. And also, I've been participating in you know, going out to D.C., going out to New York, and, you know, doing interviews, and at the same time trying to find how I could, you know, basically feed myself and find a position that's commensurate with the restrictions that I have to live under, which is, you know, very, you know, as you know, they're very stringent conditions.
Can you give us the address and what you would like people to send you and what you could use?
The address, I think, I don't know, I'm not sure off the top of my head. I think it's 2219 East Thousand Oaks Boulevard, Suite 432, or number 432. It's a mail drop, so it's really just a mailbox. And the city is Thousand Oaks, California, and the zip code is 91361, I believe. What I'd like to get is, I've been getting a lot of videos in the mail. I'd like to see Pirates of Silicon Valley. that's one movie that I missed, and I don't know if that's on video.
They're going to wind up with 7 copies of it now, at least.
Yeah, I'll probably get 7 copies, that's true. You know, that's a lot of the copies, but I'd like to get that. And the phone cards are always useful because I'm spending a lot of time on the phone. And
yeah, explain the phone cards to us. Now, basically, if people send you prepaid phone cards, that makes your life a lot easier, right?
Well, it makes it easier, yeah. You know, recently, like, somebody sent me a phone card that was, I guess, purchased at 7-Eleven. They're like the anonymous phone cards that anybody can go buy and mail. And that's... I've been incurring a lot of phone expense, returning a lot of calls that are, you know, usually by media organizations, and I've been incurring a lot of expense, you know, on the telephone. So that's always very helpful. But, you know, I also like, you know, receiving letters and postcards. I received, you know, I received very thoughtful letters and stuff, and it's just uplifting. I do receive a lot of CDs, and you know, it was interesting. Someone sent me The Alienist, which I read while I was in prison, and already had the book, so it was a shame that somebody, you know, spent the money to send it to me. It was thoughtful, but I've already read it.
Uh-huh.
And then I sometimes get CDs that, you know, music. I mostly like classic rock or into rock and roll, so sometimes I get like CDs that are, you know, in different types of music. So.
Well, we already know you don't like rap, so I think people should not send you rap CDs. Would that be
well? Well, it's not like I don't like it. It's just that I wasn't, you know, certain groups in prison. You know, you know what was amazing to me is the favorite thing people watched in there was like BET, which is the Black Entertainment Channel, and I guess or Black Entertainment Television, and you know when they'd have the music videos. But they loved cop shows. They loved America's Most Wanted and Cops, and it's like every time I you know went by the TV, you know because and it was most of the time because you know you're in a pretty small quarters there.
Mm-hmm.
They're always watching cop shows. I guess they're hoping to see some of their friends and family on TV.
Wow. All right, let's try to take some more phone calls in the brief time we have. On the address, since you're not entirely sure, please check the website, and I'm sure the address is correct there. And just one question, Kevin, has anyone sent you a DVD yet?
No.
Oh, good.
No DVDs.
Okay. No. Well, you don't have a DVD player, so I guess it wouldn't be very useful anyway. Okay, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, yes. Hello. Good evening. yeah, I was curious that since he was in prison for so, you know, for such a long period of time and he saw what is going on in prison, you know, does he get involved in any prison issues? And how did the prisoners, these prisoners who like to watch cop shows and BET, how did they treat him? And did they understand why he was in prison, you know, and did they treat him respectfully or they treat him with contempt? You know, how was he treated in this prison that was mostly black and Hispanic?
It wasn't mostly black. It was, white people were the minority, but it was mostly black and Hispanic, you know, and I think it was mostly Hispanic because there was a, I don't know if it's a new federal law, but, you know, there was a law regarding illegal entry. So if somebody was deported and they reentered the country without permission of the INS, it was a serious federal crime. So a lot of the, you know, population in California, when they were deported to Mexico, they'd come right back into the country and get busted. And they and the federal courts were sentencing these guys, you know, up to 8 years in prison.
Mm.
So it was again kind of shocking to me that most of the population in there was for that type of criminal activity. Just you know, and don't forget these guys were born in the States, but pretty much maybe their families brought them over here when they're mm-hmm. you know infants and they were raised here, and then they ended up you know committing some sort of crime, getting busted and deported to Mexico where they don't know anybody. And then they, of course, want to come back to be with their family, and then they get busted just for the simple, you know, act of entering the country, and then they send them away to prison for, you know, 8 years. It really depends on what crime they were deported. You know, they have a thing called an aggravated felony. But to answer your question, you know, I got along with most of the inmates. I had problems. I ended up in a couple fights while I was at the MDC. that most of the prison, you know, most of it was, well, if you respect, you know, the other guy, he respects you. It wasn't like state prison. And did people really understand that what I was in there for? Not really, you know. They understood I had a large support group. They knew that. They understood I was high profile. But did they really understand the issues of my case, you know, that I was, you know, held without trial and without a bail hearing for so many years? You know, maybe they understood that, but usually the other people in prison, you know, had their own problems to deal with in their own cases. So they were thinking about, you know, researching and trying to mitigate the damages in their own, you know, in their own case, rather than really focusing on other people's cases.
You think you get involved in prison issues? You know, when you speak about your case over, you know, while you're going throughout the country, do you tie your case in with prison issues? You know, and how prisoners are treated, how people are being held without bail, you know, without hearing, because there's other people, you know, being held, like besides yourself.
No, of course. I mean, there's people that are sitting in prison for many, many years, and they're eventually cleared by a DNA test because they're accused of some rape or accused of some violent, you know, other violent crime, and then they end up being cleared by a DNA test, and, you know, I think that's very egregious, and most of my the prison issues. Don't forget, when I was in prison, I maintained my silence with the media. I wouldn't even have gone on this show off the hook because I was very, very concerned, and was advised by counsel, anything that I say can and will be used against me and will be twisted by federal prosecutors. So I've just really begun to speak out after my release from prison. But while I was in prison, I was constantly fighting the Bureau of Prisons on issues that they would open my attorney-client privilege mail that was addressed to me, that they would censor Eric. I have an email address at 2600.com, and Eric would, you know, periodically print out my electronic mail from me, and they would refuse to give it to me and claim that it was written in code. Well, what the code was, you know, when when stuff was printed out with the HTML labels because of, you know, the MIME, you know, I guess if they send formatted mail it to a non-compliant or non-MIME compliant client or server or whatever, that, as you know, it just prints the HTML tags around the message, and they claim that that was in code or some secret code, so they justified censoring my mail that was sent to me.
Kevin, it was very easy to confuse them with that kind of thing. They would basically say anything was code if they couldn't read it away.
Don't forget, they put me in solitary confinement because they thought that I was going to take the AM/FM Walkman that they sell in the commissary and modify it into becoming a cellular... No, they told my attorney I was going to modify it into an FM transmitter and surreptitiously go place it in the warden's office to monitor his communications.
Yeah.
But what was interesting to me is to get to the warden's office, I would have had to break out of the secure perimeter of the prison because his office was outside the protected, you know, trap door.
What about the
syndicate? I can imagine that I'm going to break out of prison to plant a bug in the warden's
office. And then break back into prison
to get
back yourself.
What about the Center for Constitutional Rights? Are they, you know, because from what I hear about your case that, you know, this is like stopping you from making a living. I know people who are, you know, car thieves and whatnot. They go work for insurance companies, burglars, you know.
It's punitive. What they're doing is they're being, you know, the purpose of supervised release is to help the guy become a law-abiding citizen and to reintegrate into society. Mm. But what the federal government has chosen to do in my case, and I specifically, I believe, you know, was the FBI agents involved in my case and the particular federal prosecutors that prosecuted me, that they wanted to be punitive towards me, and they convinced this judge, and I think the judge was also influenced by the inaccurate media reporting about me, and so she basically, I think, rubber-stamped these conditions that the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office wanted, and it basically has the effect where I can't do anything in technology or even speak about it, to certain degrees, without them having the ability to send me back to prison.
And you have
Sorry, Kevin, I really hate to leave it here, but we're totally out of time. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
And I think the caller raised a couple of really good points, too, about how this has educated us into the conditions in prison. I know I've learned a lot from your case and the Bernie S. case, even from Fiber's case many years ago. And, Kevin, we're out of time. We have to have you back and answer more questions. I thought the call
sure,
today
no,
really
I don't
good.
Mind. I'm sorry we started late.
Yeah. There's so much to talk about this week, but we're going to have you back. And thanks to the callers for calling in. And thanks, Kevin, for answering all the questions. We'll be in touch.
Always good to talk.
Yes. And we'll be back again next week with updates on all the other stories that have been going on. So many things. We need 2 hours, 3 hours. I don't know. We need a lot of time to go over all the things that are going on in this particular realm that we're in. Until next week, for Isaac, for Kevin, for everybody else, it's Emmanuel Goldstein. Have a good night.
November 25th, 1999, 5-year-old Elian Gonzalez has been held in Miami against the wishes of his father, his family, his country, and even the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. How have Cuban-American forces in Miami, along with their supporters in Washington, D.C., been able to continually delay Elian's return? What is the impact of this case on national and international law and on a young child? Join the National Committee for the Return of Elian Gonzalez on Saturday, March 25th, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Hunter College Lecture Hall, room 615 in the Hunter West Building. The event will include an impressive group of panelists, as well as cultural presentations and refreshments. For more information, call 212-627-4506. That's 212-627-4506.
It is 9:00, and you're tuned to WBAI, your listener-sponsored community radio. Stay tuned for Tahrir.